When someone says, like, excuse me to you, like, you know, simple thing, not like a big blatant thing, but just like, excuse me, you know, you're reaching for the ketchup at the same time or something like that, or are you going to go through the door at the same time, and you say, excuse me, what do people say back to you?
You're good.
You're good. Someone say you're good? You're okay? No worries. What else? Does anybody say, I forgive you? No one says that, right? It's not deep enough. It's not hard enough. You're good is like the new thing. You're good. I hear that 10 times a day, apparently because I'm reaching for a lot of ketchup early or something. I don't know. But you're good. You're good. I think you're good, which is presumptuous. They might not know how I'm doing. Obviously, they mean we're good. I'm not bothered by that. But if we ask that question deeper and deeper levels in our life, we find out we have more questions about whether or not it's true or not. In that particular situation, when someone says you're good, I think, yeah, I'm good. But if I start thinking, am I good? Am I good? I start digging in, am I good? The deeper I go, the more time I give to how am I start to find questions that I can't quite answer, or answers that I don't like, that I might not be good. Tammy does this illustration with in conferences that she'll do every so often, hundreds and hundreds of people, and having talked about sort of the lies that we believe about ourselves, that we've been told by others, those kind of contexts, she asks everybody to like write down the lies that they believe, or the things that are derailing them. And if I'm not mistaken, babe, like 50% of them say, I'm not good enough. Just, I'm not enough. I'm not enough. And if you look at the rest of them, which I haven't really, but I've heard her talk about them, they're really just more specificity behind why I'm not good enough. You know, I'm not ready for something, or I'm not useful enough. I'm not a good enough parent or spouse. I'm not spiritual enough. I'm not qualified enough. This question, are you good, is important with regard to what we're talking about today. I started to introduce this topic last week about salt and light. Jesus is saying to this group of people, and when he says, you are the salt of the earth, you're the light of the world, he is saying in a very deep and meaningful way, you're good. So we're going to stay on track. We're going to stay with Jesus through the summer. Bounce out of these Beatitudes. There's a couple more introductory paragraphs. And then we're going to start looking through the Sermon on the Mount. And I am totally looking forward to it. The Beatitudes are the starting point, right? They are never meant to be standalone list of whatever. They are the beginning of something important. He's identifying a sort of people that are going to inhabit and populate his kingdom. You might say his invisible kingdom in this visible kingdom, right? These are the ones, these types of people, these with this sort of character and these sort of heart postures. They are something. He's pointing to them and saying, yes, you. But he's also foreshadowing that they will be deeper, more closely following him and more deeply experiencing God, for sure. They are something, but they are becoming something. I think part of the reason this is connecting with me for us as a church is we've been doing a lot of good tactical stuff lately, a lot of strategic initiatives. Really, we're doing things that bring greater and more foot traffic, if you will, into this hub. If you come here during the week, you would be so pleased and so amazed at what's happening here. We're creating intersections with people we wouldn't normally interact with. It's a lot of work, but we're doing it. We're hosting outward-facing events, right? We did a couple Third Thursdays that we advertised to our community, invited them to come and talk about particular topics that might be something that's challenging for them right now. Our trunk or treat is amazing. It's growing every year. The surrounding community recognizes it, knows it, and comes. And we've had internal gatherings that you might have been a part of, particularly designed for you or a certain phase of life or whatever. All very, very good stuff. All of that matters. But what can happen with any church, is you can drift away from the reason that you were doing it in the first place, at least with regard to the outreach things. And that is the core mission of God for his people. The question we have to ask ourselves is always, is what we're doing, the creation, the connections that we're creating, the relationships that are potentially being built, are we leaning into those? Are we mobilized as disciples of Christ? Right, we're looking at the beginning stages of Matthew, the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount. And the Sermon on the Mount be over by chapter 8. And then there's 20 more chapters. And those chapters are Jesus doing the very thing that he taught. He invites people in, he identifies who he's looking for, he teaches about the kingdom and what kingdom life looks like and the way God works things, and then he does it. He straight up does it. And then at the end of Matthew, he says, now go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the end of the age. I'm leaving. My visible presence is going to go away. And you are the new visible presence. I need you to go. The question we have to always ask ourselves as a church is, are the intersections that we're creating, the strategies that we deploy, are they creating conversations? Are we just walking right through the crowds that we gathered? Are those conversations turning into relationships? And are those relationships leading to opportunities to share about God's cosmic story and who Jesus is to me? If we're not doing that stuff, we've lost our way. The other things are important. They're even important for our own development, our own growth, our own flourishing. But until all of creation has bowed the knee and is worshiping the Jesus on the throne in the end, until that time, there is mission. Once all are worshiping, all the knees are bowed, there will be no mission. The mission will be done. Now there is mission, and if we get off of that mission, we're not at the center of what God has for us. So I say, let's just look at this again, and remember what it is Jesus is calling us to centrally. He says, I'm looking for people just like you. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Most of us know that the world needs something. Right? What does the world need? In the most profound of things. It's not a rhetorical question. What does the world need? Love, peace, kindness. Huh? Rest, please. Compassion. Grace. You're building my list right here. Courage, mercy, peace, hope, truth. Right? The world needs truth. It knows it needs truth. Tammy reminded me of something that happened with our son, Spencer. I don't know how old he was at the time. Little guy. Old enough to process things and have an adult conversation. So like 3, at least. I'm not lying. It was weird. I think he was in a grocery store and reining him in was a full-time job. Like his old man, he's like, eyes looking and looking shiny. Oh, I gotta go. And Tammy just was like, okay. You know, he was dogging her. Finally, she says, okay, fine. Just go. Just go. And Spencer crestfallen turns and goes, Mom, you can't do that. You can't just let me off like that. Right? He was serious. You gotta do your job. That's a heart going, look, you can't just release me to the wind like that. The world needs our hearts need. As individuals, we need bounds. We need to understand how God's made this world to work and to live within the authority of Him. The world needs it so much. We need it. The world needs courage. A lot of what's happening in our world today with social distancing in the new form, the canceling and unforgiveness, like there's a certain level of courage that's required to maintain difficult relationships. You have to have the courage to actually have constructive feedback come your way in a normal relationship. The world needs courage, or we're just going to drift apart. It needs so much mercy. The division that exists in so many capacities, at the core of it is unforgiveness. Right? We just divide. We just leave that situation instead of working in the direction of providing mercy and restoration and reconciliation. Hopelessness is rampant. And we have tons of connection and friends. Loneliness and hopelessness go hand in hand oftentimes. The levels of despair, the sense of myself and my life is unfixable, and I have all these friends and it actually doesn't help. And so where then do you go? The world needs the truth and courage and peace. The mental health epidemic is complicated for sure. But there is a God there's a God-created peace that's in the mix pretty deeply. Without that, it's a rat race. We know the world needs help. And without the critical elements of truth and courage and grace and peace and hope, the critical ingredients of human life, people suffer. People suffer. And oftentimes don't know why. The hard part is not believing that the world needs those things. What's the hard part? What's Jesus getting at here? The hard part is believing Jesus intends to bring that God stuff, the stuff of God, through us, through you. Are you with me? It's not hard to see the broken world. It's just hard to see that I am part of God's solution for that change. I would imagine that nobody in the room has, well, you wouldn't say this phrase, but you know what I mean. You wouldn't say to Jesus, I refuse to be salt and light. I refuse to be a critical element and a beacon of light. I refuse. No, we don't speak in those kind of terms. But we say the other things, like, I'm not ready. I don't know enough. I don't want to be pushy. I'm still working through my own stuff. I don't have the kind of influence. I'm not the kind of person God uses. That's where we go. We don't refuse. We just disqualify ourselves in different ways. What can sound like honesty and like humility in some of those cases really ends up being we end up hiding. Whatever the explanation is, we tend to answer not, I don't want to be something like, we just say, I'm not your guy, I'm not your gal, I'm not your person. Well, I can tell you, you're in good company when you say that, for starters. Right, just look through the Bible, and it's littered with heroes of the faith that started with, not me, I can't do it. Moses, who am I? Who am I? Exodus 3, I'm not a good speaker. How can I lead? Jeremiah was the same way. I'm too young. I don't know how to speak. Gideon, right? of the weak, the weakest person in the weakest clan. God says, I need you to go. And he says, I can't. I'm nothing. And he says, go in the strength that you have. Isaiah sees God high and lifted up and just falls to his knees and says, woe is me, I'm unclean. You can't possibly be here for me. And then Peter, you know, the most maligned person in Scripture, rightly says, go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man, right? That seems obvious. That's how we feel. How can you use me? But in all those cases, you know the outcomes. Now, if you're caught up in the parade of vanities that is this world, if you're, snared in the traps of self-promotion, self-centeredness, self-indulgence, like if you're caught up in this visible world, you probably aren't usable in that state for God. Your heart is in a different place. It's not seeing the world accurately, and there's other work to be done to find our way into a beatitudinal kind of character and heart posture. But if you can see, he is talking to a particular group of people. If you can see, if you see yourself reflected in the Beatitudes, you see your own need for Jesus, you can see the fears and the pains in the world and in some level why. And maybe you can see the uselessness of some of the worldly solutions, some of the worldly applications of power and pursuit of position and success. If you can see those things and you have that heart character, he's saying to you, you're good. You're good, go. No matter how you might disqualify yourself. Hebrews 10, late in that chapter, I'm paraphrasing, basically says followers of Jesus are not those who shrink back. Paul encourages Timothy to fan into flame, not fear, but power. I'm paraphrasing, love and self-discipline. These are action words. He's saying, Timothy, yes, people are telling you you're young. You're not me. You're not as persuasive, right? All that. But you need to go. You're good. Can you accept that about yourself? Can you hear Jesus saying to you, you're good, go? He is saying you might not be the obvious culture changers. Like you might not be the person that the world might pick. But Jesus looks at them, looks at you, and says, you're my culture changers, though. I do want to use you. You're who I'm looking for to represent me, to advance my kingdom, to make me, just Jesus, I'm speaking for Jesus, to make me visible again once I'm physically gone. You, y'all, this church, you're a critical element, salt. You're a critical element and an eye-opener for the world around you. The problem is just, you're good. The problem is just if we don't go. You still have value. Salt and light are, they have intrinsic value. It's the question is whether or not it's making contact. And that's what Jesus is saying in the verses, right? If the salt is still on the shelf, it's valuable, but it's not doing what salt is supposed to do. If you put a lamp under a bowl, it's still lit. It's just not doing what it is intended to do. It's not moving into the darkness. So very likely, very few of you in the room, if any, have rejected Jesus. But you might be shelved. You might be under a bowl. You're not opposed to Jesus. You're not rebelling against Jesus. You're close by, even just available in theory. On some level, we're all both things, right? God's asking us to take new steps, different steps. That was an important day in my life when I realized God was never going to be finished with me in this lifetime. I'm looking for the day when he's like, okay, you're good. No more big challenges the rest of your life. Just chill out from here on out. But there's another faith exercise that the last exercise built the faith for the next thing. And that's all of us. I don't see you generally as shelved people. You're incredibly engaged, very salty, very lighty. I mean that. It's a very active, missional-oriented church. But if you're not feeling that call from God to be used in significant ways, then I want to make that call and put that out there for you. And if you're maybe not seeking to discover and what is that next step of faith that he has for me, I would like to call you into that too. Encourage you to keep going. Discover the next small faith step. And that's important, right? That most faith steps are small. Like, God's not asking you to be like a salt mine or like some kind of white hot light of a small sun. It is usually very basic types of things. You don't have to travel around the world to find your next step of faith. It might be there, but you don't have to. Jesus is usually asking us just to bloom where we're planted. Serve those right in front of you. God spoke through the prophet Jeremiah, said, "Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile." I want to use you right where you are, even though you're not even supposed to be there. Paul says to the Corinthians, "Nevertheless, each person should live as a believer in whatever situation the Lord has assigned to them, just as God has called them." To the Colossians, Paul says, "Whatever you do, in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord." Even the instructions of the Old Testament, in Deuteronomy, which our family life world revolves around these things, right? It says, teach and embody God and his ways along the journey in the normal rhythms of life, sitting at home, waiting along the road, lying down, getting up, the ordinary spaces of life. In Mark 5, there's a man that gets healed and he wants to go with Jesus. And Jesus sends him home to tell his own people what the Lord's done. It's not huge things. Being faithful, going for Jesus is doing for one what you wish you could do for 1,000. So the application is not to like add more to your life. It's another thing to remember. The call of Jesus, it might be that for most of us, it is not adding more to your life. Jesus wasn't asking these folks to get busier in their local synagogue. That's important. But that's not what he's asking them to do. He's not asking them to start a parachurch ministry, but to go back to their normal lives with eternal purposes. To demonstrate kingdom living in the unremarkable corners with regular family, friends, and associates. It's not build a new life, it is open your current life. So key shift 2, where God has already placed you, how is it that you're gonna go for him, be available for him, to make disciples, to lean in and help people understand the story of God and how it relates to them in your home, in your workplace, in your neighborhood, your school, your team, your friendships, your regular tables, the ordinary rhythms of life? What would it mean to make contact there? What are the steps there? Blessed 10. Some of you know what that's about. Many of you don't know it, so we haven't talked about it a lot lately. I'm going to talk about it this morning, and this is what I made. If I made you something, I can't wait to show you. with the assistance of ChatGPT and about 42 versions of code, I want to show you this prototype, hot off the press. You can pull out your phone. Hopefully this is going to work. There's a QR code that's going to go up there. Hope you know what a QR code is. Click it, aim at that thing, and click on it, and you should see something. I'll give you a minute. You should see a blessed 10 something or something. I got thumbs up. Thumbs up, people seeing it? You got it? Still some people. I don't know why we all do that. No matter where we aim our phone, no matter how close we are to something, we do it like that. I wonder why we do that instead of that. All right. Do you see, do you still need the QR code? Is it coming up for you? You seeing something? So, perfect. Mock, can you just show the next slide? So you should be seeing something like this. Yeah, well, you put them all in there at once. You should be able to see the left side of that. And I'd like you to, we're going to just walk through, I'd like you to try it. So go to My 10, click on My 10 if you're not there, and then just type something. It could be random. You could just put like Joe and Fred and Mo and Curly and Larry. Just put individual names in there, hit return, and then they should kind of log in there. Is that happening? Is it working? I'm so happy right now. And then once you have a couple names in there, click on today, which is like, that could be, again, this is a prototype. It doesn't fully work. This is just for you. Don't get this around. But you can use it. The main thing I wanted to do was put something in your hands where you could easily track your names of the people that you're praying for. And I'll explain a little bit further in a minute. So once you have those names in there, right, the blessed 10 goes like this, right? We begin with prayer. We're praying for 10 people. Now, I also want to say I put some suggestions in there. You can't see it on this screen, but on yours, you might be able to see, like, the first thing said a suggestion of, like, a widow. I think, what else did I put in there? A single parent. Jesus talks about the foreigner or the immigrant, right? I'm just trying to broaden your thinking. But basically what you're trying to fill in here are 10 people who are far from God. They've either walked away from him or they're not attending to their spiritual life, they're unchurched, de-churched, re-churched, whatever it is. We're not looking to pray for people that are already part of the fold. Obviously, you should do that. These are people in your everyday life that you might not even know that well. There's always a few on my list that are like people I interact with frequently at a particular restaurant or at the dry cleaner or whatever, right? I don't really know their spiritual life, but I'm praying for them. So once you start filling this up with people in your life, and this is a great exercise to go through. I've been through it with dozens of people, and all of the different answers, I think I've seen most of them at this point. One of them is, I don't have 10, like, unchurched friends or whatever. That's probably true. That can happen. We get a little introverted in our lives. But they're there. Trust me, they're there. Who is it? Who are the people that? It could be family members for sure, right? That haven't turned to Jesus. But you got those names in there finally, and now you're just waiting on God to create opportunities. And this is a phenomenal. This is one of the most powerful things we've ever done at this church. Because what is happening is just like you would never say you're rejecting, you know, the idea of being salt and light. If I ask you, do you want to reach your neighbors? Do you want to reach your teammates, your associates? Do you want to help them find their way back to God? We would all say yes, but we have a very difficult time seeing any progress from that point on. And usually it's because we don't see them as clearly as we should. And in addition to praying for people, this helps you see your mission field much clearer. These 10 people are your mission field. They're the ones that are within your sphere of influence. And this is a wonderful part of it. In many ways, we just let God do his work at this point. He will create an opportunity for you to listen. At some point, you will have earned the trust of the person enough that they're going to just reveal a little bit more about themselves than what they might normally. God's up to something there. We need to learn how to listen. Oh my gosh, Christians are great at just giving answers so fast. Truth, let me give you some truth right now. Just listen. 10 times to the same thing before. It takes a while. But once you get some names in there, you can go to the next place, the today thing, and then you can just click on it when you pray. Just click on it. I prayed for Joe, prayed for Sally, prayed for Larry, Curly. I had an opportunity to listen to them. I had an opportunity to eat with them. Where I really, one of the powerful things that this could really end up being is if you go to progress, that's your progress. These are such small incremental things that it's hard to feel like we're making a difference sometimes in these basic, simple ways. And it's sometimes just good to look and see, oh, here's some very good missional work that's happened through me. God gave me that opportunity to listen. He gave me that opportunity to engage. Look what God's doing. But what could be really cool is the together button, where it sums up all of the prayers and all of the listens and all of the eats that we're doing as a church. How cool would it be able to see something like that for like Columbus? So, like I said, this is not a good app, really. It's got a lot of problems. Do you know how to make this a little button on your home screen? There, you know that little box with the arrow that aims up that's on almost every screen, like you can print from there or whatever? If you go and hit that little button, little box arrow, scroll around, you can literally find a link that says add to my home screen, and you'll get that little box right on your home screen. And you just click on it, go right to your thing, and it'll keep all your stuff. We're going to keep developing it. And by we, I mean probably I. just because I like it. Well, we're going to see what happens. But mostly, I just wanted to give you a place to start to put 10 names together and start praying. The rubber meets the road. It's really cool to listen to somebody. The eat part, let me explain the eat part for you. We use eat because there's so much in the New Testament about, and in the Old Testament, in Jewish culture and history, about breaking bread together. There's something very leveling about that. When you eat together with someone, you sit at the same level. It doesn't matter if you're the president or you're a pauper. If you don't eat, you die. We all are on the same boat. So there's something very leveling about the table. It's a very hospitable thing, right, to open your own table to somebody. But it really goes beyond eating. It's really this idea of how are you opening your life. We've created a couple affinity groups. You may have heard of them. You can find them somewhere on our website. Those are just groups that sort of coalesce around a particular passion or interest. Right now, they're programmed. Like we said, here is one. You can join it if you want. The actual idea and hope behind affinity groups is that you have your own affinity group because of what you love and what you do. Remember I said, it's not really, you don't want to think about this mission of God as being something additional to your life. Particularly in today's world, where everybody's busy all the time, it's actually pretty hard to get somebody to just come do something in particular. And you might not have as much time for it as you might have had 20 years ago or whatever, 50 years ago. So you have to think about what is it that I love? And who is it on that list that is created, we've created some kind of connection? And can I include them in my life? This is really where it starts to hit home. To be disciples for Jesus, it means to open our lives and allow people to be a part of it because they need to see it. They need to see it. They need to see how you handled that situation when the putt drifted left by no fault of your own, the best catch you ever made slipped off the hook, and how you dealt with it, and when you dealt with it poorly, how you lived in the grace of God, whatever. Like, people need to see it. So the big emphasis here is, like, make sure you see your mission field, and as God progresses that one or two of those relationships, maybe, be ready to open your life in some way. Work together. This person that I'm connecting with loves fishing. I hate fishing, but he loves fishing. My brother in Christ right over here. This is what we're about as a church. And I want to continue to put this in front of us as we move through this Sermon on the Mount. We're not looking to just learn things to know about Jesus. We're learning to do the kinds of things Jesus does, to bring peace where people are anxious, grace where people are unfinished, truth where people are confused, love where people are lonely, hope where people have quietly given up. And most of the time, this will not happen through huge, dramatic, heroic moments. It will happen as we open our actual lives to actual people God has already placed in front of us. So, hear Jesus' words to you today. You are salt. You are light. You're good. Not because you're impressive, but because he's forming his life in you. So make contact, open your life, let your Father be seen. It's a beautiful thing.